try not to believe everything I hear, everything I see. But it's hard with everything out there in favor of it all being real. Yeah, it's hard to be a doubt without the pieces around to believe. And it's hard not to go with everything that I'm feeling in me.
It's transfer window time, and we certainly can't believe anything we read. It's the Day Trippers. We move into week two of our preseason pods in the back of a pair of matches in the US, which have posed more questions than they've answered. Tonight, we're delighted to be joined by the Anfield Wraps dynamic duo of Neil Atkinson and John Gibbons to talk about Make a Stream, the book they've just launched. We'll also check in with Chicago resident and our tripper man at the match last night, Paul Gilligan. He'll be filling us in on the vibe in response to the tour in the States. In the implausibly hot bunker tonight, we chat tangentially around the aforementioned topics. We have bike theft victim and childish Twitter terrorist Paul Brennan and the Dale Winton-Simon Cowell hybrid that is Phil Casey. Okay, first up, let's talk about the ongoing US tour with Paul Gilligan, who's a Chicago resident and saw the game last night. Paul, you're very welcome to the show. What was the atmosphere like last night? You know, was it surprising to see a lot of Reds around the place? Were you always aware that there was an LFC community? You know, the general kind of buzz, is there a media presence for the club? How have you found it in general?
Well, overall, there's a actually pretty decent Liverpool supporters club in Chicago. They've got a residence, a spot that they meet at.
Okay.
I know the bars overall yesterday, there was a lot of the journalists going around to different bars and trying to get closer to the stadium. And I think they were blown away with, seeing, all the Reds in and the sing songs in the pubs and everything going on. And, you know, overall it went over very, very well. Like, it was red all over yesterday. It was a great scene, to be honest with you. It was nice to have Liverpool in Chicago for the first time in God knows, maybe ever. I don't even know if they ever played here before. It's been a long, long time, at least not in my time over here. So,
sure. Have you found as well that there's been a bit of media coverage that you know, that's been noticeable? Like, I mean, is it basically, I'm wondering, like, they're over there to raise the profile of the club and for commercial reasons. Is it looking successful from that regard?
Yeah, definitely, because there was a lot of talk yesterday then with the delay in the game before that, and I'm just looking in on the Twitter feeds and everything, and people going nuts about the game not being, the first 10 minutes of the game wasn't being shown.
That was very irritating, yeah.
Yeah, and there was just the uproar about it. It was all over the place, you know, through Twitter, through all the other social medias that are out there, and, you know, I know for a fact that There was the big TV audience yesterday. I didn't get exact numbers on it from. I'm sure they'll release them today at some stage, but yeah. I haven't seen them yet. But you know, after the World Cup with the way the U.S. national team went too, I think there's the whole, let's call it soccer as I like to call it over here. The whole profile is definitely raised, and you know, the coverage over here has been really good too for the last three or four seasons too. You know, it's very hard to not see a game, so
yeah,
you know,
you're almost better fixed than we are in some ways. I mean, between the various channels there, the
3 o'clock kickoffs.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be a match that's missed really. Like, you know, I suppose there is the timing of the matches at times is a bit of a pain in the ass for you guys. But what? So basically, would you know, your impression from over there is that, like, this kind of thing is a bit of a success? I mean, what do you think about taking the team so far away? Clearly, there's upsides and downsides for people like yourself.
Well, personally, I like it because, and I think a lot of the Reds over here I suppose the California inside Reds and the ones that are 2 hours again behind us,
yeah,
they're, a lot of those guys traveled in too for this weekend and probably did holidays around the tour, you know, so they come to Chicago or they're going to New York or Charlotte or wherever, Boston for last week, I suppose. And so a lot of those guys sort of plan around the tour because we know about the tour 6-7 months in advance in most cases, you know, and or at least 4 or 5 months in advance. But the overall buzz, I suppose, is it's the coverage is really, really good here. The time zone thing, yeah, it's a bit of a pain. It's a pain if you want to go see a live game, and you know, I'm a good, you know, hour away from the local and everything. But you know, to go down and meet up at all the Reds and the Liverpool Supporters Club, and I've done it 3 or 4 times and everything, and it's a great atmosphere. You know, you feel like you're sort of part of a little small Red community when you're part of that, and you know, it's just the profile of the whole game over here, and Liverpool overall is really good. And I suppose if you look at the other side of it, is they used to go to they still do, I suppose, to the Middle East and Asia, South Asia and stuff, and you know, that's equally as far away, if not further away, than jumping across the pond.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Paul, talk to us a little bit about the match that you saw yourself. You know, who impressed you? What were your thoughts you came away with? The strongest thoughts you came away with after the match
From yesterday's game?
Yeah.
The one thing I came away with, and I was sort of sitting looking at it just off the halfway line, and some of those counterattacks yesterday, the speed, like breakneck speed. That one where Henderson and Markovic and Sterling were involved.
It was lovely stuff.
That thing was so rapid, it was unbelievable. It was just one of those things where, you know, it's hard. I suppose when you see it in front of your eyes, and I watched the game back this morning, and it doesn't look as good on TV as it was in the flesh. Mm. It was just breakneck stuff, and it was unreal. Like, the speed in that team is unbelievable. The one little query I probably do have is, or fear I do have is, we lack a little bit of power. Now, I suppose we saw that from Chan, and we've seen him in, I suppose, the first two games over here, that, man, he's a powerful-looking unit, I suppose. But, you know, it's one of those things where Markovic is a little very slight guy, and obviously Sterling's not the, although he's a strong little guy, Sterling, but, you know, you wonder about the power and off the team. Because Brendan just seems to be going mad on this pace, and he loves this rapid sort of fluidity that the transition does. So, you know, that's my biggest fear about it. I suppose the overall thing was there's some good performances. I thought Sturridge looked very good. And even watching it back, like, he did an awful lot of things I suppose we weren't used to seeing him do last season, where he was sort of like a lone guy up front and was waiting for support, and he held the ball up relatively well. He got knocked over a few times, I saw. And there's a few other things, I suppose, with you could tell, like, heavy legged guys like Enrique look very heavy footed, you know, towards the end of the first half, and a couple of the guys that were just coming back that didn't look as fluid as you'd probably like to see them, I suppose. But overall, they were very compact and you know, looked very secure. I watched an awful lot of Henderson, like, just following him and seeing what he did, and the guy is amazing. Like, he truly is an amazing, amazing guy to watch. The amount of work and pressing that he does on the ball, it's unreal.
That's the joy of live watching, isn't it? As you say, you can follow around like your own kind of camera. Paul in the studio here, Paul touched on Markovic there and his impression of him maybe not being as powerful as we'd have liked. What was your overall take of him from the match last night?
I didn't think he was particularly brilliant, but it is, like, it's only pre-season, he's only gelling into the team. But he looked maybe a bit like he was trying too hard sometimes with the dribbling. He could have played it a bit simpler sometimes, but there were some great moments. The counter-attack that Paul mentioned with himself, Sterling and Henderson, it was himself played the ball into Sterling's feet, and I think Sterling just failed to find Henderson, but it looked intelligent. He played the ball straight into Sterling's feet and ran around the other side of him while Henderson crossed over to the left as well. I thought so. I think there is, obviously we know he has a lot of potential.
Yeah.
It's just he does look maybe a bit raw. Obviously he could iron that out quite a bit in pre-season, because it is where you get a lot of your rustiness out. But
you're very reasonable and measured, which is nice to hear in comparison with some of the utterances that we were seeing on WhatsApp last night from your man over here on the left. What was your nickname for him there, Phil? Just to remind the listeners, would you like to tell everyone?
Benny Markovic.
Benny Markovic. Why is that?
I just thought when he ran like somebody out of the Benny Hill show. He was like, you know, when they speed up somebody jogging. It's like he has a small gait. So when he goes, his legs are going like 100 million miles an hour. And it's like, the floppy hair as well, as it just goes.
So he's an instant write off then. He's obviously got a floppy hair and a dodgy run.
Floody's written him off anyway.
Floody written him off before he even seen him. It was like, now I know players. All the players.
Paul, what do you think? Like, is it, like, from what you saw there yesterday, I know, like, it's basically two teams, you see, isn't it, really, in those friendly matches?
Yeah.
You talked about the speed and in transition and that kind of thing. Was there anything else that looked like you thought, you know, we're obviously going to play a different style now, we're going to have to play a different style with the absence of Suarez? How did you think that attack was looking, or what potential did you see from the players that you got to witness yesterday? And who would be your front three, I guess?
Well, if I was to go front three, obviously Sturridge and my feeling, unless they sign somebody, my feeling is that they're going to push Sterling a little bit further forward this year.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see him maybe playing a little bit off Sturridge. So he's the one thing about Sterling is he's unbelievable at tracking back. Like, I watched him yesterday too, and you know, his work rate is really, really good, and I think that's one of the sort of morsels of Brendan's attack. It's sort of like, you know, defend from the front, and if you lose the ball, track back sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
The other side, I don't know where we're going to, how, you know, Coutinho has to sort of nearly fit in that team by the looks of it. I don't know where Lallana fits in. I don't know enough of him. I've seen him obviously plenty with Southampton over the last year and a half, 2 years. He shows flashes of being really good, and he's that sort of Brendan style player. But geez, I don't know if I drop Coutinho over Lallana. Do I think they'll spell each other? Probably.
Paul, tell me what you thought of Lambert, because again, there's been conflicted views here amongst ourselves with the chats we've had. How did he come across? Because, like, let's be honest, he didn't have his finest hour there in the match that you saw live. Was there anything that you could see, some intelligent off the ball running or anything else for people to hang on to?
I think what he's good at, I think he's an intelligent player that I think will be able to hold the ball up, and I think he's got an eye for a pass too, and I think he tried a couple yesterday that didn't just come off very well for him. He's not afraid to have a shot himself. We saw that in the Boston game too. But he looks labored. Like, he just doesn't look like he's, you know, you're looking at a team with the attackers around him that are, they're moving at a million miles an hour, and he looks like he's just, coming back from the beach, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Did you get to see the Roma match as well? You did?
Obviously on TV. I didn't see it live. But sure. I saw it on TV. Well, I don't know. Call it preseason, if all you want. That was hard on the eyes. Now, in all fairness,
it was. You know, did you see development? Do you think there was a little bit of development from one match to the next?
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, I think you're looking at such a, you know, you've got 11 players for the first half, and it's such a huge transition then in the second half. I suppose the highlights from that game, I thought Coutinho looked really impressive. He looked like the best player on the field by a million miles. In the Roma game, there was a couple of things. I suppose we saw our first view of Emre Can and what he brought to the table. And I suppose the highlight for me was him dropping the shoulder and going on that little rampage down the wing was impressive looking. And the only other thing I could think of, just in case you asked me about that game, had to be Adam Phillips and his cameo.
Yeah,
had to be. You know, that was a thing of beauty. You know, 2-footed lunge that was like about half an hour late.
Yeah.
But the best thing about that whole thing was that Adam Phillips' thing was, you saw Henderson going over and protect him, and like, there you go. There's your future captain there, in my opinion. You know,
yeah.
The guy is just like, you know, F off you. And, you know, he's giving plenty of lip to the guys that are trying to chirp at the 16-year-old kid, you know, and he's there like a godfather protecting, you know.
Yeah, Phil, that's a good point that Paul makes there about the team spirit and the emerging team spirit. We saw it over the course of last season. Is this one of the benefits of these trips away, do you think, that you do get a little bit more bonding going on?
I think, like, again, we had incredible team spirit last season, and it builds up. I think results also breed team spirit, because you feel like you can't be beaten, and the more wins you get, the more close the team get. If the team are losing, you'll see more people getting on each other's backs. There'll be questions then about the team spirit. It's all a natural part of it. When you go on these type of tours, like, let's not cut ourselves, the friendly games at the end of the day, the results don't matter as much as if it's a league match. To the players, they just want to get their fitness up. The manager's the same. He's the same way, saying, look, we've got minutes under the belt, you know, we've got this, we've got that, and the most important thing out of here is that we get another step closer to being ready for the start of the season. to go back to the matches, like, again, I'm looking at it and I'm saying, okay, who's strengthening our first team from either from the emerging players that we want to see coming through, or that's coming back and looks like they're going to make a step up again from what they performed last season? And, you know, Sterling, again, we've seen a guy come off the back of an incredible 6 months, and he's taken that form into the friendly game that he was in last night. Like, you know, you're looking at a guy who's progressing and is continuing this progression. He doesn't look, we're talking about we've lost Suarez, and straight away he's the one that's scoring for us last night. He's so alert and he's so quick. Sturridge mishits a shot and he's there, and even though it wasn't a clean strike, he's doing that thing that you want from all goal scorers, in the spot at the right area. If you want, and I'm not a particular fan, but there was a definite hint of Michael Owen-esque in terms of the way he got into the position, used his pace, got in there and just got the defining touch to take it into the net. It doesn't need a great connection, but it just needs a decent connection. Emery Chan, you know, we watched him in the first game when he played the 20 minutes or so, and he was bossing that midfield against Preston. He comes into this game, and again last night he's everywhere. He's just everywhere. Like, he's covering the left back, he's in the centre midfield, and he's bossing the midfield that's going on. As Paul said, he's a unit. Like, you know, of all the signs that we've made, he's the most Premiership ready, in my opinion. You know, he's knocking players all over the shop. Even for the great chance that Markovic has in the first half, he wins the ball back, knocks a fella out of the way, and creates the space for Markovic to be able to exploit and get into the box. And I would have been hoping in a couple of weeks' time, Markovic bends that into the bottom corner, into the top corner, and into goal. Markovic, I thought he had a poor 30 minutes. And I thought there was a bit of nerves there. I thought his touch was poor. I thought he fell over a bit. But at the same time, he actually came in fairly strongly in terms of his last 15 minutes. He showed a lot more of what we were expecting. Those really, as Paul said, the explosive burst that he had with Henderson, you know, there was that burst through as well, where he uses pace. He looks a flyer. He does need a haircut, because I can't persist with a man bob. You know, if it's long, it's long, fine.
A man bob,
yeah. Okay. You know, there isn't even a feathered look about it at all. It's
he
just
looks sort of like Aquilani mixed with Federer or something. I'm beginning to sway to you. I think, yeah, he's a flop already.
Maybe if you had a headband or something, I'd probably be able to get around it, or an Alice band or something. It's just the lack of anything. It's just a proper man bob. If you had slightly wider hips now, and I was looking at it from the back, you know, you could get confused. So that's what scares me a wee bit, right? So Henderson, he may as well have never taken a minute off. He just takes up from where he left off again. Sturridge looks rusty, but Sturridge always looks that when he comes back from the first couple of games. You've seen it when he came back from injury. But again, he's there. He's the most prominent part of our attack, and he shows what we need. We need something else like Sturridge in that team. We can't afford to go in with just Sturridge, Borini and Lambert as our front three options. We need something else.
I thought Sturridge has a good all-around game, except for his finishing. I think the two shots, obviously the miss hit that Sterling took away, and there was another one where he cut in and blasted it high, wide, and not very handsome whatsoever. Yeah. But I thought his work rate was brilliant. I thought the way he held the ball up, like you saw the tackle, your man did on him because he couldn't get around him, and he just like lifted him out of it. Like, it was ridiculous and a friendly. Like, but there's a good few moments like that where he brought people into play and he drifted out wide, and that's what we're going to need from him now. Now that the team is being built around him. Because he does have the ability to do that, and he just needs to do it
to show for the ball a lot. Yeah. While you're on there, moving back to the far end of the field, was there anyone that made a case there for you? Like, you know,
Glenn Johnson made a case for it to find the biggest skip that he could be thrown in. I think somebody said the reason we don't go to the Alps anymore, in case there was a chance they'd drop him off at Sanitas or something.
Jesus wept. That's shocking. Anyway, serious football question to you, Paul Brennan. What anyone make a case? Martin Kelly, for example?
Mark, I thought he did well when he came on. Like, he's a strange one, because he's been around for years now, and we can't seem to get a full season out of him. And like, sometimes he comes back and he looks like the rustiest man in the world. Like, he looks like he needs to be oiled or something like that. But like yesterday, I thought he played fairly well. I thought most of the defenders did. Positionally, I think the defence did fairly well. There were still a couple of moments where, like, I think our defence is still really prone to panicking. When you know, if a ball gets put over them or anything. There was one time where, you know, we kind of stopped Olympiacos' attack and they came back, and one of their midfielders just dropped it into the box, and I mean, there was just pandemonium. I think that was when Enrique just about kind of took it off
Saviola's toe. Yeah. And in fairness, Enrique had turned off.
Yeah.
Unusually.
That's fucking unusual,
so,
isn't it?
Yeah. I know, Jesus!
That's so not like Jose.
The starting fullbacks, well, Glenn Johnson's a risible waste of everyone's time, so I won't go into him. Enrique was, he was, like Paul said, he's one of these players that's kind of stodgy when he comes back. Looks like he has to shift a timber whenever he comes back from pre-season. Yeah. Yeah, Rodgers' first season when we were in America as well, and he came onto the pitch and I was like, what pub is it? What wedding has he been onto this pitch? But I think the centre-back Skirtle did fairly well. A couple of nice interceptions and blocks. And Coates, I thought, was very good.
Worth a go for you? Is he going to be worth a go? There's a theory that he's on his way out, you know?
Yeah, he does seem that way. He does... I think he's putting up as good a case as anybody else is, really.
On this tour,
to be honest.
Sure.
Yeah, especially even as a backup. Because we know, obviously, he's really, really slow. But positionally, he looks really good. Mm. I think he's a good tackler and he's decent in the air.
He made a great tackle. Remember when Joe Allen gave the ball? He played a true ball to the Greek lad. And Coates showed a good bit of recovery pace, which I wasn't expecting. And just got the tiniest of toes to take it off your man. Mm. That forced him wide. And then Jones was able to get a touch on the ball as well and knock it wide. Like, yeah. I thought that was really impressive because we'd seen him before. I mentioned it last week when Rodgers lost faith in him. It was when Lassina Traore did him over in Russia, right? And similar like that. And he was just left dead. And it was great to see a good recovery pace on him as well. It was good for his confidence as well. Regardless of what happens with him or whether he's part of the plans, it was good to see a young centre-back, you know, getting some confidence and showing a bit of form.
Yeah, and I remember, I think he was one of the, he was part of the Oldham massacre, wasn't he, where himself and Skirtle got absolutely bullied in the air. And you were kind of wondering, well, what's he good at then if he's not able to deal with a big man when he's huge himself? But he looks a bit more assured, and I thought, I don't think he was out of position once all game. No. I thought he played really well.
On Enrique, you're clearly not keeping up to tabs with the selfies. That man has not got any timber on him at all, I tell you. Eager to show it to you as well.
I don't follow him. I followed him on Twitter. I had to unfollow it. Like, it was just getting too
for
mad.
Your sanity.
Yeah.
Paul, haven't seen the game live, Paul. What did you think of Mr. Jones in the goal? Is he someone that you're going to be very, very happy to see there as the go-to guy should something happen with Mignolet?
You know what, Jones he's been one of those fellas that over the last couple of seasons he's done really nothing wrong in the pre-seasons and as few outings as he's got. Is he what you want for a backup? You know, is he up to that level? I don't know, but you know, he seems sure enough, I suppose. But once again, I think if he was playing the first 6 or 7 weeks of the season, I think we'd be shitting it a little bit too, wouldn't we?
Well, like that's exactly the question I'm asking. Like, even based on seeing him up close and personal, would you indeed be a little bit shitting it if he had to start the season because Mignolet was crocked?
I would.
And that would imply that you'd like to see someone coming in there, yes?
Yeah. Like, I think it's going back a little bit. I think shop window time for him, and maybe even just for Coates too. You know, maybe it is shop window time for them. And you know, like, I was happy to see Coates looking well yesterday, but you know, the bottom line is how many centre halves do we need? We have
106.
Like, it was funny, I was just thinking earlier on, like, what's our lineup going to be? Two centre backs, Hendo in front of them, and seven attackers. That's really sort of, you know, the feeling that we have. Or is it going to be the other way where we're going to play five centre halves and four up front?
I think Brendan played four once and it didn't go down awfully well.
It was against Southampton as well. So then we bought all the Southampton players. I did wonder whether the Dennis the Menace kit was going to look good, right? I was actually surprised at how well it looked on the cameras. I don't know, Paul, what did it look like up close?
What's that look like live, Paul?
I wasn't the biggest non-fan of that third kit. I actually liked it from the get-go. So
okay.
I was one of the few that, like, I had no problem with it. And compared to last year's abomination, I think it was anything looked good, you know. I agree. I was worried about the keeper kit too. Yeah. I thought that was going to look bad, like, you know, very much for that. But that actually looked quite good too.
Yeah, I do have one thing, right?
Yeah,
fastening the button. No,
makes that yellow button stand out. That's not good.
I don't want to see a yellow button on a black, grey and red kit. Like, it really is the leftovers from the purple and yellow stuff from 2 years ago.
Paul Brennan, you've stepped in goals on occasion, haven't you? What do you think of that stripey affair that Brad was wearing last night?
I can't even remember what he was wearing.
Really?
Was it the grey one?
It's
with
kind of grey and
grey
white.
Grey stripy with the sort of red. It make a nice rugby jersey.
Yeah.
I didn't really fancy it. Because I didn't really make that much of an impression. I can barely remember it.
Fair enough.
I'll borrow a phrase off you. I think he's the most is what he is keeper you could get. Just like, you know, if you boot a ball down the centre of the goal, I think he'll get something on it. There's no guarantee that he'll catch it, but he'll usually get something on it and it might kind of go back out into play or whatever. Yeah. Like, I don't think he excels at any part of the game. Yeah. He's just kind of like, he can make saves. You don't know where the ball's going to go or anything like that afterwards, but...
Yeah.
I don't think he's like brilliant or anything, no.
To be fair, I think that was an Andy Young phrase.
Was it?
To give the man the credit that he deserves there. What do you think, Paul, looking forward to the remaining games of the US Tour? We've got City, don't we, on Wednesday night.
Thursday night, I think it is.
Is it?
Or maybe it's towards tomorrow. It's
a professional podcast here.
It's midnight. It's midnight Wednesday here. So there you go.
That's Thursday. It's 00:00.
If you could all just turn off your various listening devices so I can just apply a beating here for a second. Paul, I was in the middle of asking a question before your man started getting all fussy about GMT. What are you thinking? Are you hoping to see more of a kind of concrete lineup and maybe lead from that into how you think this season's going to start and whether or not you're optimistic about the start we have given the fixtures?
Yeah, I'd like to see, I suppose, the core of what we think we're going to start with. I think, like, I watched saw highlights of the City game this morning. Mm. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I watched the highlights of it, and you know, they had a sort of I don't think they have any of their internationals really back yet.
No. Yeah, they had fake Sterling playing as well.
Fake Sterling scored too.
Yeah. Yeah.
with his little hair color too, the little shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Joe Attack, I think, looked a deal yesterday too. And you know, he's when they add him in with Dzeko and Aguero and
scary, isn't it, Paul?
What?
It's scary.
It is. It really is.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. I'd like to see, I suppose, a core of what we started with yesterday, and see if they can gel a little bit more. And I the one thing about yesterday's game, I thought we sort of sat a little bit deep, and I thought the we were very compact at the back, and I just thought we didn't move the ball like we were used to seeing at the end of the season. And I know it's early in the preseason here, but I think once we get a little bit more fluidity from you know, that defense to through the midfield and through the lines and get that going. So I'd like to see probably a lot of that first half team again.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure. I think I read a few minutes ago. I think Lovren's on his way over too. So we probably won't see him until. We probably won't see him on this tour at all. If whether he's coming over or not, they're only here for another week anyway. So.
If he's on Remy's plane. And Origi's playing it, so like he's never going to get there. Yeah, never,
that
ever going to
just went around in circles.
Hot air balloon just wandering around the globe in the jet stream.
I reckon that lineup that we used in the first half, though, I think that could be something he goes for in a lot of the big games.
You think?
With Chan and Henderson closing out a lot of the space, and just try and rely on the front three really, and
the
maybe
pace.
The odd burst from midfield.
Would you not see Coutinho in that front three instead of Markovic, for example?
I think Coutinho's
maybe.
Gonna...
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think that's the midfield he'll go for though.
Yeah.
A lot of the time to keep it really kind of could keep a lot of legs around Gerrard, and then if they can get forward, but try and rely on the speed up front as well.
Mm. I thought it was
create the problems.
I thought it was incredible at times when you watched that when Olympiacos went to break, the speed that Henderson and Chan were able to get back around Gerrard.
Mm.
So he was never exposed. He was never exposed to the counter attack from Olympiacos at all. And you know, it's something that, you know, we complained about when Lucas and Gerrard was in there, that we used to be left wide open, and that just didn't happen yesterday. Like, you can see Coutinho playing. I can see Coutinho in that team instead of say Markovic, and playing, as Paul said, you could push Sterling upside Sturridge and play almost with Coutinho as a 10 and with the other three, because Chan is well capable of being able to cover the flanks and also cover in the midfield, and if you have Henderson, he can do the same on the right hand side as well.
Well, Phil, today we heard Brendan say that he was asked a question about Jack Robinson. He said, look, he'll get his chance, and if he takes it, that's great for us and it's great for him. And I don't know, it seemed to be almost as if Brendan was doing a Hodgie and kind of lowering our expectations a little bit about who might be coming in there, because obviously we've got the other man that we spoke about before. Now, if it is Enrique and if it is Johnson, and I think most people roll the dice and say it probably will be,
those two boys you mentioned midfield are going to have their fucking work cut out for them, aren't they? Let's be honest. They're going to have to cover into those corners and cover track runners. And
yeah, but that's why, at the same time, to just offset that, like, that's why with the legs of Henderson and Jan, it means that it takes a lot of pressure off Gerrard, so he can sit. He can literally sit there and cover those corners.
Yeah,
it's asking Gerrard taking another step in terms of progression and playing as that player that's in front of the defence, and hopefully he can, because in fairness, he took on the role quite well last season from when he did it, and you know it is possible that he'll grow further into that role, because he's not worried now about being exposed when he has the two lads in front of him. And even with Alan is getting up and down the pitch. I thought Alan was very good when he came on. He was fast, he was very quick in our counter attacks at that stage, and as Paul said, we were sitting that little bit more deep, but boy Jesus, he was well able to get up the pitch and support the attack when it was going on as well.
Did Joe Allen look good to you, Paul?
He did. Yeah. He really did. Jeez, I couldn't believe how small he was when I saw him in
in Toys R Us with you.
Seriously. But I've always liked him. You know, I've never really been one of those people that sort of jumped on his case when he was getting no love at all. And he's one of those fellas that I think he does very basic stuff, but he does it very well.
Yeah.
And you know, there's no frills about him. But I think, you know, he was buzzing yesterday. He was up and down that field. He was buzzing when he came on yesterday. He did really, really well, I thought, too.
Yeah.
He's one of those fellas that you know, is he going to be a starter when we're playing European nights? Probably not. Is he a guy that'll come in and spell somebody? Absolutely. And is he a guy that's probably going to play, 60, 70 minutes on a Saturday before a European game? He probably is that, too, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, he's going to be a very valuable piece to the midfield puzzle for sure.
Paul, absolutely fantastic to get your on the ground take on things there, and really hope you enjoy the rest of the tour, and we'll keep in touch over the season, fella.
Appreciate it, lads.
Thanks a lot, mate.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, we're very pleased to be joined by Neil Atkinson and John Gibbons, who'll be known to you as the lads from the Anfield Rap and the Rider podcast, and they are here to promote their book, Make Us Dream. So, lads.
Cynically so.
we think that's proper order. Lads, I know both of you do some fine scribing for the Anfield Rap, for the website. Was this something, this book, was it something you planned all the way through? Was it a planned enterprise, or was it something that grew out of your own writing as the year went on, or something that inspired you at the end of the year? Neil, we'll start with you.
Well, it's interesting this. Basically what happened was we sort of started talking about it around October, and then, you know, it was the sort of thing you'd have a chat in the pub and say, oh, should we do a book? Shouldn't we do a book? This season's a bit mad. We've probably been knocking around long enough now to do a book. You know, look at all these other fellas, they're all doing books.
Yeah, those fellas. Yeah.
Those fellas, yeah. I mean, they're all right, aren't they?
They're all right, yeah.
Yeah. But then what happened was I started to do those match review things, and we talked to Steve and John, and it'd be like, you know, this is something. And then John said, and I said to John, basically, I don't want to fully commit to a book, because if we don't win the league, then we've, you know what I mean? It might not be right. And John went, this season's been so brilliant, so mad, so astonishing, it needs to be written down.
Yeah.
So, you know, he very much talked me into it aggressively around mid-March. Is that right? I think it was about mid-March. He said,
yeah.
We should definitely do this.
I think so. I think that's when we committed properly.
Yeah. And then from there, sort of, like, just started to make a note of things, and then I very aggressively wrote a list of 110 chapter headings and told them, basically, get on with 40 of these, you.
And that was how
we got going. That's about right, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a perfect insight into how me and Neil work.
John, there's a lot of mention of aggression there, fella. It's a little bit of a worry. What could you explain to me what your own thought process was behind it? Like, did you find yourself browbeaten, or was it you that was doing the browbeating, according to Neil?
It just got to the point where, as Neil says, I thought it was worth it. I thought whatever happened, it doesn't. And I think I feel even more kind of vindicated in that, because then I think in a few years' time, or maybe in 5-10 years' time, I think it's going to be difficult to explain to people just how mad this season was. And you kind of try and remember it, and you kind of try and put things together, and you say, oh, well, we had all these crazy scores, but then we didn't win anything. And there's obviously, I mean, Liverpool's a really successful football club, and we've, you know, all watched seasons where, you know, ended with trophies, and that's ultimately, you know, what you're in it for. But I think this season, I don't think anyone had more fun than Liverpool fans, and I mean in the world. I don't mean there's a football group of football fans watching their football club who have more fun than we do. And then surely that's the actual point of you know, doing it and spending all the money we spend. I mean, you guys even more, because, you know, you have to come over and things like that. So I think ultimately, you know, there's only so many teams you can win something, and the rest of us, you know, are just trying to get as much enjoyment out of it as possible. And I think even more than, you know, Man City fans or Arsenal fans or whoever, you know, who did get the trophies here,
you know, I think Liverpool fans had the best ride, and I think that's worth documenting. And I think it'd be great to look back on in years' time and just, you know, when turning the pages and just remembering the crazy results and the amazing performances that went through and how we felt. And it does bring it all back. It's done it for me, you know. And I wrote the bloody thing, you know. When you read it back, it does bring back how you felt, and you remember the nights out after and things like that. And gives you a warm fuzz inside.
It's a funny thing because so much of, I think so much of modern discourse, just to get slightly posh for a second, so much of modern discourse is quite cynical. It's quite, you know, it's very much, it looks to pick holes in things, modern criticism the same. And I think that getting something which just, right, is about joy, because that's what it's about. The book's about joy. Yeah. It's about how much fun this was. It is just, and you know, you read it now, and there's I'd like to think there's analytical stuff in there, and I'd like to think there's some insightful stuff about football in there, but it's primarily about a feeling of like you're on fire. You're going to football matches and you're coming out, and it's like someone set fire to you. Someone set fire to every aspect of your body. You're flying into a city centre. You know, anything feels possible. Everybody's gorgeous. Everybody's funny. You want to be around everyone. You want to hug everyone. You want to hug the people who aren't there. You want to hug the people who are. And you want to hug Evertonians. And, you know, you find yourself, and Evertonians sort of want to be hugged by you because you got caught up in it for a month or two. And the whole thing, you know, the city was absolutely pounded. And that's what the book's about, really. And yeah, there's loads of, I like to think there's loads of good football stuff in there. But that's a funny thing to write about because there aren't loads of people doing that. You know, practically everything that's written about anything, not just football, but, you know, about films, about music, about whatever, it's often people trying to sort of, you know, trying to find an angle or trying to find a point. Well, our angle, if you want to find an angle, is that was fucking amazing.
Yeah. Well, if it was coming down to the idea of celebrating joy and just, you know, remembering the happiness of it, like when you were putting the book together and compiling the various memories and stuff like that, you must have revisited all the various highlights. If I was to ask you, Neil, what was the most, the happiest one of all of those joyous moments, is there one that stands out?
It's funny, really, because there's the moments which, for instance, there's the Coutinho equaliser against Fulham, which, you know, in hindsight, it's massive. Obviously, it's massive, you know. But at the time, I just felt like the release of a knee-knocking anxiety. You know, that was all that one was. But then, you know, John always bangs on about Sturridge's fourth against Arsenal after Stone. What would be his answer there for you? But that's, you know, that's the way in which it goes. I think it was the absolute, my God, highlight in my head, sort of, is Sterling's opener against City. It's just the fact that he's, you know, he's 19 years old, and there's, you know, I remember all the classic Liverpool DVDs, wherein you watch the official history of Liverpool, and I think it's a Dalglish goal where there's like the lads sliding in front of him, 80s defenders who were overweight sliding in front of him, and as he just keeps dropping his shoulder, and they're trying to get a block in for a shot that never comes, and finally just puts it in the bottom corner, and that's what Sterling was doing, and it was right in front of me in the ground, and you know, there'd be everything building into that, and City turn up, and they go on to win the league, but the main challenges at this point, and Raheem Sterling just does that to them, and that for me is the one which, as I say, at the time I just thought, yes, this is incredible.
Yeah, well, absolutely. As sources and moments of joy goes, it's hard to beat that one. John, for yourself, which one would it be?
Yeah, the Arsenal one that's been mentioned, but also the home Merseyside derby, just because.
Oh yeah,
just because. I think, like, another reason why it's good to kind of document seasons and the way we have is you can kind of forget a little bit of context, and context isn't the most important thing in the world. You know, Christ, it's great to just remember how great things were. But going into that derby, there's a lot of people who thought Everton were going to beat us.
Yeah.
You know, we hadn't played great the weekend before. You know, Everton were on a good run. You know, we had a couple of injury doubts. You know, they had Rodwell coming back, and a few people were worried about it in the Liverpool contingent, and the Evertonians were a little bit bullish.
They were dead bullish.
So going into that, it was quite a tough start to the game, really. And then from Gerrard's goal, obviously we just kind of tore them apart. And so I think that for me was a brilliant night. And I was with all my friends in the ground as well, which always kind of makes it a bit better. So yeah, the home derby, and then Sturridge driving around the next day in his white Ferrari.
John, was that the one? Had Everton won that day? Would they have been like 2 points behind us or something?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it was going to be close, and that's what the really interesting thing about the Arsenal game is as well. Because when we beat Arsenal at home, you know, they were, I think, 8 points ahead of us at the time. Would have gone to 11. They were top of the league. They had the best defensive record in the country, and it's little things like that you forget. And you know, just how kind of big those games were at the time. But yeah, Everton were right on our heels, and you were talking at the time, well, you know, about there was still the debate over fourth going on by cowards. Mm. Who were?
Can I tell a story? I've got to tell a story. We were over in New York for the United game, and the United away game was on. And we're on the. It's like you've got to get up at stupid o'clock. So we're on this train because it's a half one here, and so it's like 7 or 6.
I'm just going to interject it here and point out that the fans in America get up at stupid o'clock every week. We have to do it once, and we're still moaning about it.
Yeah, we're still absolutely shocking about it.
That's their own fault for living in stupid o'clock land. So.
Well, I mean, we try to run a strong no blame culture, but you might have a point.
I'm just thinking other things.
Yeah, you know, New York has got a bit going on. But we're on the train over from Brooklyn to Manhattan to go and watch the game in the Legends Bar that we're going to watch it in. And we're on the train, and we're moving along. And by this point, you know, we've gone on the run that we're on. We look unstoppable. And Mike Nevin and Martin Fitzgerald are sitting next to me. They've contributed to the book, and they're sitting next to me and John on the train. And they just start talking about how many points behind us at Everton are, the 8 or the 11. What impact will that have on today's result with reference to Everton, with what happens with us and United and all this sort of stuff. And John just turns around to them and says, lads, just put a fucking sock in it. Absolutely ridiculous. Everton are not to do with us. We're only going one way. And they were going, oh, but you know, it could be a tough today. And John just went, there's no way United can beat us. So the train doors open and we walk out. And as we're walking out, John just steams ahead and I sort of trot along and catch up. And he says, you're going to have a word with them too.
Quality.
Yeah, I'm liking these aggressive John stories.
Do you think, I have to ask, right, because, you know, especially in the last couple of years with the advent of all the Twitter accounts, the websites, the podcasts, obviously, the whole lot, but do you think if we had been around, say, in 08, 09, it would have been documented as well, and we'd have the same sort of memories as the last season has given us, or are they just two completely different campaigns in reality when you look back at, especially when you look back at that one?
I don't think it was quite the same personally. This year completely came out of nowhere, really. I mean, we came, you know, 6th, 8th and 7th the last few seasons. You know, we thought we were going to progress. You know, there were signs towards the back end of the season before. Well, not just the back end, the second half. You know, that we were a good team and we had good players. But I think it was just kind of so unexpected, really, to jump that much and to become a team so close to winning the league. And also the results and the way they happened and the manner of how we, you know, we beat good teams, you know, especially at home. So I think, I mean, 08-09 was a good season. Well, great season. I enjoyed it. And, you know, it's a real shame looking back on what happened to that team under those owners. But, you know, I mean, maybe looking back, we might have done something around that. But I don't think as a season it's necessarily comparable in terms of, you know, what the football club achieved and the roller coaster that we went on. I don't know if you agree, Neil.
While we were writing the book, it sort of, we got to about, well, we had about 70% of the text of the book written. It sort of hit me when I was looking back over it and furiously trying to write more, that what we were writing about was reclamation, that there was this feeling that, you know, that something was being reclaimed, some sort of spirit, some sort of feeling was being reclaimed. Hmm. And the thing about 08-09 was it was still under Hicks and Gillette. Yeah. And there was still, you know, there was still issues knocking around the football club in a big way. For instance, you know, as much as we take the piss out of the Evertonians over the Arteta money, you know, we never saw the Robbie Keane money again, as an example of it from that, you know, from that period. And you know, I think that whereas this last season, and that this is why I'm so desperate it continues, there was a huge sort of, you know, everyone was united in a common purpose. Everyone got right behind it. Every aspect of it, right the way through, everybody was just all in. And I wouldn't for one second, for instance, say that the atmosphere for the 4-all against Arsenal in 08-09 was worse than, you know, practically any given atmosphere last season. You know, I'd say that they were mostly comparable from what I can remember. But the point being was that it felt like, and it's partially that came out of nowhere, it's partially the nature of the manager, it's partially the youthfulness of the side, it's partially that side's sort of exuberance that it displayed. You know, all these things sort of added up, and I think that's why I think it just became, you know, but there's things I remember from 08-09 that are very, very similar. A friend of mine once rang me after we beat United at home 2-1 08-09, and he rang me up, and he in the morning he said, oh, what happened last night? I can't remember much. And we had a chat, and he went, oh, my face hurts from smiling and laughing so much. And there was loads of that last season, like, you know, the number of times you'd still be Arsenal, you beat Arsenal 5-1 at 12:45, and you're still going at 1 a.m. And, you know, you're still going at 1 a.m. going absolutely berserk, and then waking up the next day, and somehow, I just sheer adrenaline, you're not hungover, but the only thing you can remember is your face hurts. Well, I think, Neil,
Sorry, Neil makes a really good point in that, in terms of 089, if you wanted something right about that, you couldn't have wrote a pure football book in that. It couldn't have just been about, you know, what was going on the pitch and what you were doing off it as people, you know, would have had to be so much context involved, so much in terms of what's going on with the owners. And personally, I wouldn't feel like I was kind of best placed to do that, really. I'm better at writing about drinking.
The day we beat United 08-09, that morning, there was a march around Anfield. I was on the march. There was a march around Anfield that took place before we beat United 2-1 in 08-09. And, you know, it's not to say for a second that everything will be rosy forever and ever now, or that, you know, there isn't still the odd question around what the owners are and aren't doing. But there's no march, and there's no need for a march, and that does not help. Because, you know, you go on a march and you'd be marching around Anfield and you'd, you know, I remember all this, and you'd be walking past lads in beer gardens who'd clap you along, and you'd be, why aren't you marching? Why that? This doesn't make any sense if you agree with it. But you're, you know, and all that sort of stuff was still, you know, was still knocking around, and people still had those feelings, and that makes it difficult. But now, you know, that's gone. And but the thing I make the observation in the book, and I hope I'm right, I might be wrong, but I think sort of what a lot of that left now, a lot of that, because that's burnt away, the sort of solidarity of purpose that was whipped up in that period is what's left. The beef's gone, I think. A lot of the beef's gone. Mm. But what's left is this sort of desire to say, we're going to really enjoy this because we did all that and it was pretty horrible. And, you know, we had the Roy Hodgson stuff. We had the reality of Hicks and Gillette. We had all of that stuff going on. And I think a massive reason why people just got behind it in the intense way they did was because we've done that bit, and all the horrible bits of that now have gone. We've purified it, but we've got this wonderful thing left at the centre, which is that we're not messing around. You know, we're fucking serious. We're Liverpool Football Club, and we've had to go through all this, and now we're there.
But Neil, if you take it that, you know, as you say, there's been a reclamation of joy and that kind of happiness in going about what we do, which is just supporting the team. There's nothing like transfer season to cause people to start pissing and moaning and getting sort of agitated and fighting amongst themselves. We've had it here. There's probably going to be a fight in the room even here tonight. But like you know, in the wake, I know what a fan you were of Suarez like myself, and I've written your stuff on him. Given that everyone's favourite mentalist is now gone, I mean, is there the opportunity for us to dream in the same way next year, do you think?
Yeah, I think there definitely is, to be honest with you. I think Suarez was a catalyst massively. I mean, you know, it's split in all sorts of directions, but, you know, it's Rodgers' team. But I think a lot of what it did, certainly in the first half of the season, was hewn in Suarez's image. But I don't think there's any reason to think they're not thinking about the same thing that we're thinking about, which is the league title. But that's not what, they're not the conversations that are being had in Anfield. It's interesting that, you know, a couple of the players have actually said it as and when they've signed now. I think both Jan and Markovic have gone out of the way to mention the idea of winning the league.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's the critical focus. And I think they're still there thinking that they can really do it. And I think one of the reasons, though, why there is, you know, there's bad-tempered exchanges on it is, one, because there's always bad-tempered exchanges, but two, because everyone's so desperate for it not to stop.
Yeah.
Well, if everyone's so desperate for it not to stop, let's believe the footballers are so desperate for it not to stop.
Yeah.
Let's believe the manager's so desperate for it not to stop. Therefore, why should it stop? You're still playing 13 sides next season who, if we're all honest about it and we all look each other in the eye, are shite. There's 13 really, really bad football teams in that league. You know, and every dog can have its day. They can all put a performance out the bag. But there's, you know, Liverpool will play 26 games they should win. And of those 26, you know, they should win, you know, 10, 12 of them comfortably, emphatically, the way in which they won games last season.
Yeah.
So I don't think, you know, there's any reason, if, as I say, if everyone keeps pulling in the same direction, internally in the club, internally in the boardroom, transfer committees, and then on the pitch, if all those players address it. And, I, you know, for instance, I don't see Jordan Henderson running less. He did 90 minutes in a friendly the other night.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see those players running less, so I don't see why it stopped. Do you think it's going to stop?
No, I don't. I agree with you. I think we need to get more in, but I think in terms of players, but I think we will. And yeah, so I don't think the belief will have gone out of them. You know, as Neil said, they seem very bullish. Even Gerrard seems very bullish. I was a little bit worried about Gerrard, to be honest with you, bearing in mind what happened at the end of last season, and also, you know, the summer. He didn't have a great summer with England for lots of different ways, but, you know, he's come back very determined and making the right noises, and, you know, growing even more as a leader, if you like. The new guys are making the right noises. You know, Colo Torre is going to come out and say we're going to win the league, so whether he's here or not. So, yeah, I was slightly concerned you know, how much last season, how much that, what had happened at the end would take it out of us, and then that was before the even Suarez thing. But you know, the players seem very happy, they seem very focused, and you know, Raheem Sterling, nothing in the world bothers him. You know, he just thinks it's dead easy, doesn't he?
Yeah,
that'd be great.
I think the only thing that stops Sturridge scoring 30 league goals is his own fitness. That's the only thing that stops Sturridge scoring 30 league goals. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And when you think about that for a second, you know, there's not that many centre forwards in the league that you can actually say that about. You know, it's easy, you know. Aguero, for instance, might be one of them, but you know, I still don't think necessarily Arsenal have got that player. And if you've got a fella who you look at and you think he could score 30 league goals, then you know you should be in any conversation about any silverware.
Yeah, John, talk to me for a second about if we take it that we're going into this season now with a different kind of tension. It's less negative than it was. And we're reviewing what we can see in front of us now with the preseason and the new boys coming in. The man affectionately referred to as Benny Markovich by my mate Phil here, who thinks he runs like Benny Hill. What did you make of the new boys that we could see so far in preseason?
I thought Markovich looked dangerous. I thought, you know, he's obviously still quite raw, but I thought, you know, he got at them. I thought they didn't really seem to know how they want to defend against him. He probably had a little bit more space than he'd get in the Premier League, but still he looked dangerous. His shooting was maybe a bit off, but we kind of knew that would be the case because his goal record was not great. But, you know, he looks to have a lot of attributes that will suit how we play. Yeah. I think Sean looks good. I think he looks very composed. I think he looks very at home. It's interesting that he started that game Sunday night because, you know, it looked like a kind of first 11 at first almost, and then changes from there. So it's interesting. I don't think he'll start ahead of Coutinho when we start, but it's interesting that, you know,
he might start at City.
Yeah, he could do. Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting that they put him in there. He's probably not ahead of Alan at first, but it's interesting that he wanted to have a look at him playing there, you know, in the head of Gerrard, because I think that is likely to be where he'll get, you know, more game time at this stage, while Gerrard, you know, still able to play most games. So I think it was good to have a look at him there and see how he did. He seems to have a lot of belief in himself, and I don't think he's going to come to Liverpool and be phased, is what I'm saying. Yeah. I think he seems to believe in himself a lot, and they kind of should be here.
Yeah.
And that's kind of all we've seen really at the moment, isn't it? Lambert as well, who I'm not completely sure about, but that's I feel like a bit of a miserable bastard doing that because everyone's so pleased for him. So
I think you have a point on Lambert. When we're talking about transfers later on with the lads here, I'll be sort of saying it as well. I think the guy is still in that sort of wow period that he's playing for Liverpool, because obviously it's the club that he supported since he was a boy, and he needs to sort of snap out of wow and playing here for Liverpool, and needs to get into getting down and just treating it as a job and doing the business on the pitch. Like, for me, he seems to be a bit rabbit in the headlights when he's on the pitch. He wants to score, but you know, you have to put yourself about more and stop looking at it that I'm wearing the crest and I'm wearing the jersey. It's about now acting in the jersey when you're wearing it as well. I think the Chan thing is interesting, because again, looking at it, you know, I think he played there because Markovic is possibly not as defensively
there might be something in that, yeah.
Competent, and he was covering that left side, and Jesus, he covers some amount of ground. Like, every time you looked, he was in the frame of the ball. So he's almost like an even more physical version of Jordan Henderson. So that's really impressed me in terms of what it is.
That is impressive.
If that's even possible.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, those two guys are, they're going to have to cover a lot of ground next season, and you know, that's going to really help us defensively. So if you've got someone, you know, similar to Henderson who can do that, I mean, that helps the three guys in front of them as well. You know, sort of concentrate on what they're good at. So yeah, it's an interesting point that.
And Neil, of the people that we've seen so far, who's kind of getting you dreaming about next season? Is there one in particular, or is it the obvious beauty of Emre Can, or who is it?
I'm looking forward to seeing Lambert because I think it looks like he's got a he can play a lovely pass, and I love anyone who looks.
He's
like
got a through ball in him, doesn't he?
He's definitely got a through ball in him. So I like the look of Lambert, but you know, I understand. I think he's the sort of player to look great with pace around him. I can see there being the odd frustration every now and again, but then I think that's the case with practically every footballer. None of them are perfect. It's the nature of them. I think that the use of Coutinho is interesting, but I thought that the back end of last season as well, Coutinho dropping a bit deeper, I think is really interesting. I think he's going to look better the deeper he goes, to be brutally honest with you, because I think that he's going to be able to get on the ball more and influence more.
Yeah.
And I also think that the big thing from last season, which, you know, I think we've nailed in a manner which I think that earlier on in the season it looked like only City and Arsenal had, is having people in centre mid who can beat men.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's not been discussed enough, really, by a lot of the people who write well about football tactics. Is that I think that, you know, you looked at City last season, they would so often have lads in centre mid who could beat a man. Arsenal, when they were looking good at the start of the season, had people like Ramsey who could just take one player out of the game. Yeah. By the end of the season, Liverpool had Gerrard who can take a player out of the game. They had Henderson who can take a player out of the game. They had Alan who can arguably take two out of the game with the way in which he carries it and shields it in centre mid. And then they had Coutinho and Sterling at times being you know, proper midfielders in that area of the pitch, and they can take two or three players out of the game. And if you can take two or three players out of the game in the middle third, then all you look up and see in front of you is someone like Daniel Sturridge, someone like Raheem Sterling, and loads of green space. And that is, you know, that's terrifying, that's dangerous, and that's the reason why, you know, I remain certain that we'll be breaking 76 points, we'll be in the business end of it, because if you've got that in your locker, then wherever you go, whoever you are, whoever it is that you're up against, you can terrify people. If you can take two, three midfielders out the game, then suddenly you've got a back four that is absolutely backpedaling at 100 miles an hour. And that's why I think, you know, that's what I'm looking forward to, and that's what I've liked seeing from the pre-season games, is we're not taking any backward steps from that. If we've got to put Coutinho right back in there, then we'll do that, because that's the advantage it gives us.
Lads, just on the flip side, who signed our P45s on this tour?
I don't think it's anything new, is it? I mean, it's all the players you'd have thought. Quatez is going to go.
He's done all right, though, hasn't he?
Yeah, I thought so.
He's not going to get his games. I mean, that's the thing. You know, Quatez is surely going to go.
Well, with Lovren coming, we've just got too many centre-halves. And I don't think Agger not being able to play at the moment really helps him, because I don't think the manager is generally sure we can trust him anyway. And, you know, so I think Agger's the probably the biggest name who's looking, you know, less likely than others that he'll stay. I think Lucas is maybe playing himself in a little bit more in a funny sort of way. So I thought Lucas would go. I'm less sure now, but I think Agger's probably the biggest name that we'll see leave.
Yeah. Okay, lads. Really, really appreciate your time. Thanks a lot, Neil and John. And listen, best of luck with the book, lads. I hope it flies.
Come here. It's out, isn't it? Out everywhere at this stage, and it's out.
It is. Yeah, it's out everywhere. So around the world, you can get it. Just get on our Twitter, which is @MakeUsDreamBook, and there's links to buying it. But you can get it around the world on hard copy, and it's out electronically as an ebook just on Amazon at the moment, but hopefully soon it'll be on all of the devices and things like that as well.
Yeah, it should be getting sorted out, the ebook thing. I mean, we're absolute novices at this. We barely managed to get the thing out. The other thing as well is that we're sorting out, we've recorded two-thirds of it as an audio book. It's not like a normal audio book.
Who have you got doing the voice over there?
Well, no, it's us. With one of the fellas.
I'm sorry about that. Are you hoping for Morgan Freeman then?
I was kind of hoping for Morgan Freeman, I'll be honest.
Yeah, Samuel L. Jackson or someone. Yeah, yeah. Me and John. The way in which it works is that we have a bit of a chat. We read one piece about each game, but then we actually have a chat about the game. So it's much more of a commentary than if you buy the book. Basically, there's still something in the audio book for you, and if you buy the audio book, then there's still something in the book. If you see what I mean?
Yeah.
We're only reading about 40% of the book out, because one, we're terrible at reading out.
reading out, yeah.
And two, you know,
it's harder than you think, you know.
Yeah,
listen, I know.
Go, to be honest with you, you're fired at the talk, and I can hear you. You know, you think you're good, you fancy yourself. You want to have a go with the reading out?
we know from Trev's outtakes.
It's a shambles, lads. It's a fucking shambles.
Ruthless, that Trev. Ruthless, I wouldn't stand for it, mate.
All right, lads, listen, thanks again for your time,
best. Nice to catch up, guys. See you soon,
easy,
best luck, fellas. Let's move on and take a look at the transfer activity off Liverpool Football Club over the last while. Lads, we're actually a bit shit at transfers, aren't we? I mean, we're shit at leaking stuff, we're shit at completing deals, we're shit at wasting time, we're shit at losing players in airplanes over the Atlantic. Jim Fishlock, we're delighted to be joined by yourself today, fella, as a man who's organised a transfer committee on his own time there at one stage. Could you please tell me, do you agree that we are shit at transfers?
Yes, we are. I mean, I've got family who've travelled from the UK to Seattle in America quicker than Liverpool have got two footballers.
Yeah.
And when the one's got there, he's not fit.
Yeah.
Now, bearing in mind, everyone says we've got the best scouts, we've got the best sort of people doing research into these players. we know everything. We know what they have for breakfast. They know how many times they go to the toilet, how many times I might pick their nose, everything.
Yeah.
But we don't know that Loic Remy has got a dodgy knee and a hole in his heart.
All right.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah, yeah. How do you explain that, Jim? I mean, we've been just been chatting about that there, and it's one of the things I wanted to touch on. What the hell is happening there? I mean, that makes no sense.
I have literally no idea. It can't be a shock to them.
Yeah.
Because all you've got to do is put his name into Google.
Well, yeah, exactly.
We struggled with that before.
Apparently we can't even find the right interpreter for people. So it's a combination of people who have no idea what they're doing and they're just muddling through it, which for such a large corporation, I suppose, as we are, to have people in those roles who can't do what would appear to me a simple task, really.
Yeah.
You know, if you're buying something, you know how much you want to spend. You've invariably sort of not tapped the player up. You've already put the feelers out and thought, how much is he willing to accept wages-wise? If he asks for something or, you know, is rumoured that he's going to want more than what you're going to pay for him, don't bother going in for him.
I
appreciate it's not as easy as it is on FIFA and it's not as easy as it is on Football Manager. Obviously, that goes without saying. But surely it's not as hard as we make it.
Yeah, fair. Paul Brennan seems like an awful waste of 2 weeks to have invested so much time in this guy, and then facts that were already known seem to be the reason why we've cut out.
Just the simple fact is that it's a Liverpool transfer, so something has to go wrong. even if it was 2 weeks, like that's quick for us wrapping up a deal. So obviously there has to be something else going wrong. So like, you know, he's on the plane over and, lads, any who's looked into his medical history? Nah, sure, it's fine. And then, you know, he gets there and they find out that he's failed fucking 4 medicals before. He's got a hole in his heart. He's got a dodgy knee that's
going to explode. I'm surprised he could get travel insurance, to be honest.
That's probably why it took so long. He had to do a stowaway in a fucking boat across the Atlantic.
It was a cruise, yeah.
He was on one of those tall ships. He had to wait for the round the world race dock to fucking Boston.
Well, Phil, what are the committee doing? Seriously. I mean,
well, they don't have fucking laptops for a start.
Yeah.
And if they do, they're using Bing.
Yeah. Like, is there any logic to it that you can see?
I'm lost at the logic at Remy. I am genuinely lost. And like, I was thinking up until, you know, when the rumoured 16.5 million deals for Asidi and Borini were coming out, and I could accept that, yet Sanchez wanted to go to Arsenal, you know, for lifestyle reasons or whatever reasons it was. And I said, fair enough, like, you missed out on that. That's not a playing thing. That isn't a player issue. You know, that wasn't that we were prepared to meet terms. But then we went after Boney, and suppose we met the agent, and Hugh Jenkins was pissed off that we'd gone behind, didn't ask Swansea's permission because we were just going to activate his release clause, which we knew was, and that was all over the papers. This is another thing. Everything that we seem to do gets fucking leaked, right?
Yep.
Or a version of what we're doing gets leaked, because don't forget, on the Remy thing, they were telling us on Friday night that the deal was done, that he'd completed his medical, and they were just waiting for the paperwork to go through. Literally, like, I cannot understand how they couldn't have done. Like, the first thing you'd imagine to do, if I was looking after transfers in the club, the first thing you do is definitely look into the medical background. Now, you mightn't get the full medical facts, but at least you'll be able to find out, has the guy had previous issues with doing medicals for clubs? Is there anything standing there as a condition, or is there an injury that we have to be aware of when we do the medical? Because surely you'd want to check that more than we want. And it's not the first time this has happened, because you remember Marvaux came over a couple of years ago and he's meant to go on a friendly,
yeah,
and he failed the medical.
Do you know what though, Phil? All I will say, right, in Remy's defence, you know, obviously it's not his fault that he's got these conditions, but it's very similar to Demba Ba. He's failed medicals.
Yeah.
But honestly, I can't remember any games he's missed through injury.
No.
While he's been at West Ham, Newcastle or Chelsea.
Yeah.
And I don't think Remy's missed that many. So, you know, if we know that he's got these medical conditions, why are we even talking about a 5-year deal? That was the other weird thing about this whole deal.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it was like, it was literally the worst deal we could be doing.
Now,
Remy wasn't really that great a signing, and then to stick him on a 5-year deal at 27 anyway, it just flies in the face of everything we've sort of been doing with our contracts and with our deals for everyone we sign.
I can understand the logic in signing Remy, because his goal scoring record in the Premiership has been quite good in terms of being getting 1 and 2. If you're looking for a similar player to Sturridge, who's not maybe at Sturridge's level or potential level that Sturridge could get to, you can see playing style, yeah, he can come in, he can do a job. If you want to rest Sturridge because he's carrying a knock after Champions League game, you can bring Remy in, that's fine. I can understand the style thing and the whole lot, but it just boils back to this. You know, I actually feel sorry for Remy, because this stuff is all over the media that, you know, he's failed a medical and he has an issue with his heart, and, you know, was an issue with his knee and stuff like that. And it's very tough for the fucking guy, because this stuff is out there. They mightn't have put the exact thing in the paper, but it's out there now at the moment. He's gone over there. Obviously, look, this is it. It's been there beforehand. So they knew what they were going over. So you can't. I just think he's been treated fairly shabbily in terms of what's going on.
Well, that's what's incomprehensible about it, is that the knowledge was there. You've got poor old Harry Redknapp there now looking like a fucking bulldog sucking piss off a nettle. He's that pissed
off. I'm delighted for him, though.
And he's saying, you couldn't meet a fitter lad. I really don't know what's going on.
He hasn't met him yet, so he wouldn't fucking know the spoofing bollocks.
He's the fittest lad you can meet, says Harry.
To play devil's advocate a bit, like, obviously there have been doctors that have passed him fit through medicals, so you could say maybe the club wanted to look at him. But like, surely then that's one of the first things you get out of the way.
Yeah.
Like, before you even get into personal terms, like, you know his medical history. Say, right, we want our doctor to look at him. And if our doctor says he's okay, then yeah, we'll start. Like, what's the point in agreeing absolutely everything and then like saying,
couldn't they have done that in Anfield? They did Lovren's medical in Anfield. I mean, in Melwood or in Liverpool, wherever it was, right? Yeah. Could they have not have kept, if they had doubts about the him passing the medical, could they have not have done it under, you know, kept it fairly hush-hush, did it in Liverpool? If anything showed up then, nothing but gets out, and it's like, it would have been still just a rumour that we were possibly in for Remy, or we were considering other options and he was something, and we were in negotiations. If it doesn't come out, then it was, we couldn't agree personal terms, etc., etc. He goes on his way and you don't get this massive splash and rubbish that's basically gone on in terms of, you know, we're talking about a guy who's, you know, who's gone all the way over to Boston, expected to sign, was being given the 7 jersey. We knew he was being given the number 7 jersey. Yeah. So there was definitely high hopes from Rogers. So I'd say, to be totally honest with you now, I'd say Rogers is fucking hopping over this one. Because if I was Brendan Rogers and I'd had Remy obviously in my plans, I'm giving him a jersey, I know what number he's giving him, I know what role he's going to fulfil in the squad, and then something that is that's pre-known suddenly stops this whole thing because we can't get the insurance, whatever. It just seems a lack of pre-work that's done in this transfer. It's madness.
Jim, talk to me about that idea of the leaks that are going on. I mean, as Phil says there, right down to the fact that we all knew he was getting to 7 and there was massive debate about whether he was worth it or not and all that nonsense. We can't seem to do anything under the radar anymore, can we?
We all know there's one or two guys on Twitter who get a little bit of information. But the fact is, if those lads are getting a little bit of information and from wherever they're getting it from, it's obvious that other people are going to get little bits of information. Mm-hmm. And it's obvious that those other people aren't as sort of scrupulous as the lads that we speak to. Yeah. And they're just putting it out there.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you can look at it one or two ways, can't you? You can say, well, you know, if we're in for a big player and the player sort of, like Lovren, is itching for the move and we think it might be difficulty working with the clubs, then put it out there that we're in for him, and hopefully there's a little bit of a fuss kicked up like Lovren did, and eventually the deal will go through. Or you can look at it the other way. Why don't people keep their fucking mouth shut, wait until the player's got the deal done, signed on the dotted line, and then we can all talk about it. You know, the fact that we know what squad number he's going to have and everything, I mean, you know, that's vital information, really, I would say. That's information that can only come from sort of one or two people at the club, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've all seen the Be in Liverpool documentary where Rogers and Allen are talking for about a week about what number he's going to have. This has already been done and dusted, Remy, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, people might say, oh, it's only a squad number or whatever, but, you know, who are we to know these things until, you know, I mean, Lovren didn't even have his number on his shirt yesterday.
Yeah. You know, more chat about that today, yeah.
That's only come through today, hasn't it, what number he's wearing? But, you know, you might say it's stupid, but at the end of the day, people are getting hold of all this information. And we were told initially, weren't we, that the club had stopped it all. You know, we were, you know, doing things the Liverpool way. There was no leaks. Nobody was knowing anything until anything had happened. Hmm. I think the only people who don't know what's happening are the people at the club, unfortunately.
It kind of looks like that. Paul, speaking of the leaks, I mean, who the hell are we going to go to next? The big name that's being mentioned now is that Lacazette guy from Lyon. I mean, and you can only presume because that rumour's out there that's very, very real and that's the latest leak. I mean, who do we turn to?
I have no idea.
Like, is it going to be a step down from Remy? I mean, are you like? Wouldn't this be a great opportunity to show some ambition and go and just sign someone proper?
We've gone from Sanchez to just completely looking at, you know, kind of mid table Premier League players. Mm. It seems so
yeah,
far.
Yeah, we've seen that pattern before, haven't we? Yeah, you know, with McTerrion.
There was rumours there about it came out about, you know, Royce, probably unrealistic. Isco, maybe we could fuck money at Real and get him, probably. But like, it just seems to be, okay, now which kind of mid-table player we go for now, because Sanchez is off the table. Like, it just seems like the kind of the standard of target is just falling off a cliff once that didn't happen.
Jim, I'd ask you, right, because you guys did do this, right? You know, it's something that I thought about last season as well. Our strategy always seems to be a bit hit and miss in terms of, you know, I never get the feeling that we have five targets, right? And there's a hierarchy of targets, so that if one falls through, we move on to the next. If the next one falls through, we move on to the next. And Connolly used to get slated for being a gonad, a walking gonad, basically, right? But it is, you know, at the same time, he always seemed to put in a load of bids for players and always seemed to have a fallback option if one didn't, because we always seem to be negotiating, constantly negotiating with different players. And I'm just wondering, like, I think we have two targets. The impression I get is that we always have two targets, right?
Yeah.
And when those two targets fall through, we don't necessarily have the next target lined up. And then there always seems to be a gap then. Like, we thought there was Boney and Remy, and we went in for them.
Yeah.
And then there seems to be a gap. Now, there's the talk of the Lacazette thing, right? But, like, in reality, there just seems to be a void now because the Remy thing is falling apart.
To say, yeah, remember last summer we had Mkhitaryan, then Costa. And there was the opportunistic kind of had a go at Willian, but he wasn't a target before that.
Yeah.
And then it fell off a cliff down to Victor Moses.
Yeah.
And we all know what happened, the pass against West Ham.
And that was after like 3 weeks or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your own thoughts on that, Jim?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're right about Connolly. And I always think, you know, if you have three targets for every position, you should be able to secure at least one of them. You know, Conor Plianka. In January, he was supposed to be the man. We were supposed to sign him and he was supposed to fire us to Champions League football. And if you're signing someone in January who's going to get you to Champions League football, to my mind, you think that not only can he get you there in 6 months, he can play there.
Yeah.
So why haven't we gone back to that deal? Because as far as I was aware, that deal was done and ready in place and he should have been there on the 1st of fucking July.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But then... You know, I was told when we were doing the transfer committee thing that the times had changed and we moved on to bigger and better targets. Well, if our bigger and better target was Alexis Sanchez, who can play wide and can play through the middle, and then it's from him to Loic Remy, well, Conor Plianka is somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
So, if we got Conor Plianka and he's ready to come in and play in the league now, immediately it takes the pressure off Markovic. Because at the moment... We're looking at Markovic and everyone's like, oh my God, he's got to play. And if he don't hit the ground running, we're in dire straits, you know?
Paul, to further the point that Jim makes there, and he's expanded on what Phil was saying about the amount of targets and the idea of ambition here. Look, we're strongly linked again now with this Javier Manquillo guy. And, you know, you kind of assume that that's something that's possibly going to happen. Now, I don't care how many people come on Twitter and tell me that they're very familiar with him because, you know, he hasn't played many matches. And the fact is, nobody knows a whole lot about this chap, genuinely. You know, you can talk about scouting and all the rest of it, but if he's our next go-to guy, what's going on? You know, as Jim says, if you don't get Moreno, why aren't you in for Rodriguez or someone of a similar ilk?
And especially the fact that it's a month or a year long loan of a fellow who's barely played.
Two year long.
Yeah. Now, clearly, I know he's a right back and he's going to be covering for or coming in for Johnson, but whatever. But
yeah, but the, like that is incredible. That's one of the first targets we've come out to
for a right back.
For a right back.
Yeah.
Like a year long loan or 2 year long loan for a fellow who's only played like a couple of games last season for Atletico. Like it is just.
But there's a guy, Paul, who plays for Atletico ahead of him, Wanfran. Now, you know, if Atletico are edging their bets with Manquillo and thinking he might develop into something, they want to buy him back and sort of just let him go out on loan and get him back after he's developed at us. But why don't we go and get Wanfran? Why don't we put a big bid in for him?
Yeah. So it's back to the ambition idea again, Paul, isn't it?
Back to the ambition.
Yeah, yeah. And like, I mean, I don't know, we could go off on one here and get really upset about it, but it's very hard to have faith in the fact that, you know, be calm, this stuff is going on behind the scenes, don't worry about it, don't throw your toys out of pram, when there's no evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, well, and especially, like, I don't want to bang on about this, like, signing for mid-table teams, but, like, and I know people say trust in Brendan and trust that they know what they're doing and they've scouted these players. But the fact is that like we've lost Luis Suarez and like we are down a match winner because like Lallana and Lovren, like that's 40 million, over 40 million that we've spent there on them, and like we're not even close to buying another match winner. Like Markovic, obviously another 20 million for the future. Origi is going back on loan. Like we still have a few positions to fill, and like we are running out of time to buy someone who is really going to kind of replace the sort of quality that Suarez has. So we do have to show some ambition. And like, I know people keep saying this, like, trust Brendan, these are the players that he wants. But like, you can't just dismiss everything by saying trust Brendan. Like, if you're watching the team losing 1-0 and you and your mate are suggesting, like, oh, what would you do now? Would you bring Coutinho on? You don't say, oh, shut up, you trust Brendan. Like, you have to talk about stuff like this.
Yeah,
like,
but also Brendan could see the feel-good factor among the fans, and he knows how important that is. Like, he saw the fans lining the route way for the bus and all the rest of it. Like, people would like a mad signing. But
can I just say, right? If going back to the idea of trust Brendan, right?
Yeah.
So Brendan wants Remy.
Yeah.
Right, and that's who he wanted, right?
And you're saying it looks like he was contradicted.
And then we didn't deliver that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you know, it boils back to he's told him who he wants. He wants to be trusted. Now, if the guy if the guy can't pass the medical and the whole lot, and he thought there was going to be issues with the medical, it comes back to what I said. If you thought there was going to be issues, then you keep that well under wraps and you don't sort of allow the leaks to drop and the whole lot, and you say, look, let's hold off on letting any of this leak until we get a clear indication whether this is going to work or not, because if it doesn't, it's going to come back in our face. And I don't have an issue with us not signing them because we weren't happy with the outcome of the medical, right? I'm unhappy with the way it was handled as opposed to what happened, because you don't want, like, One of the players that failed a medical for us before was Mark Vivian Foe, you know, and they do show up issues with players that could have horrible consequences for both the player's health and anything further down the line. So you don't want to put yourself in that position either from a club point of view, you know. But I just said it's just handled so badly in terms of the way everything has gone on, that's the disappointing fact, because we've been told about the transfer committee. We're told about we're much more well equipped in the market. And I'll tell you one thing. I'll give Ian Ayre a bit of praise on this, because he lined up two deals together for Asaidi and Borini. Now the players still have yet to go or have decided not to go, right? But he's managed to get them out there. He delivered the targets that have been set out in terms of Lovren, Lallana, and Chan, even for his buyout clause. He needs credit for that. They got Markovic in as well in terms of delivering that. Now he's actually done. If you look at the speed of the business that we've actually done, it's been quicker than we normally see Liverpool deals be done, and you know he deserves a bit of credit for landing those deals. But he can only do the deals if the targets are lined up and they're identified and they know exactly who they want.
Now, well, this is where there's a problem though, Phil, because even last summer there was a disconnect with the committee and Rodgers, because the committee, well, we spent all summer looking at Papadopoulos, didn't we? The guy, another guy with a bad knee, couldn't pass a medical.
Yeah.
And then, you know, towards the end then, we switched completely where we needed a right-sided centre-back. We switched. Sacco came into the market, or the committee had seen him and scouted him and said, we're going to get him. You know, there was all that talk of, well, Rodgers didn't really want him. He was going to stick with Agger and play Skirtle alongside him. Play Papadopoulos if we got him alongside Agger. You know, so that was sort of a disconnect. Then we've had it again in January where we couldn't get the deals across the line. Again, you might say, well, look, it's down to that Ukrainian owner or whatever. But we left it to the last half hour. So, you know, again, you're putting all your eggs in one basket and you're at the mercy of one of these, you know, Ukrainian lunatic owners. And again, this summer, we seem to be working off two different hymn sheets, really. Mm-hmm. You've got the committee, who I think are purely looking at the future and are happy to spend money on players for the future. And then you've got Rodgers, who, like you say, we all trust him. Of course we do. You know, he deserves that on the pitch. And he deserves us to be trusting of his coaching style. Has he done enough in the transfer market to say he should have full control over it? You know, I don't think so. So as a fan, I'm entitled to turn around and say, I trust Rodgers 99.9%. But that 0.1% of bringing in players, you know, I don't.
Paul, we're gonna. You always ship comments about being overly negative here, and it's possible that we're coming across that way here. But look,
we're good and positive when we talk about the matches, though.
We are.
So that's allowed. There has to be a yin and a yang.
There has to be a realistic angle on it too. And like, what I want to talk to you about here is we've talked about the transfers coming in, and frankly, we're a bit shit at them so far. What about the stuff on the way out? Phil mentioned the deals that have been lined up for Barini and for Asaidi, and they seem to be hitting the skids a little bit. In both cases, what we're hearing, and again, it's what we're hearing, is that the player isn't necessarily happy with the setup. Barini apparently wants to stay and fight for his place. The only one who's out of the people that we'd like to have seen out is Aspas. So what do you make of that? That side of things.
It comes back to like what I said about Remy. It's just like transfers just generally don't go too smoothly for us. And for us to get offered the guts of 20 million for two players that we're actively looking to get rid of, like that's just, that doesn't happen for us. So of course the players are fucking saying that they don't want to go. I do get like, and people are correct saying like, it is admirable that Barini wants to fight for his place. But like, and I can see why he does, because he was injured for his basically his full season that he had here, went and did well at Sunderland, and now we want to sell him. This is all after he left Roma, like where he was doing really well. So I can see why he wants to fight for his place. But I think most fans are looking and saying 14 million for him, we're never going to see an offer like that again. Because like there's not a club that wants him as much as Sunderland does and is going to pay that again. So it is fairly annoying to see like that it's not going to happen. And the same with Asaidi, I think the fee that we're getting for him is really good considering like we bought him for next to nothing. He's done next to nothing for us.
It's because of the year that's in it. It's because of the payments that all the clubs are receiving. And
maybe, but it is really annoying. Like at least we have kind of got rid of Aspas, like, because he like, I don't want to be too harsh on him. He's playing a lot of play out of position. It's a new league and all, but
he had to take corners.
Yeah, the corners.
I have to say, I was very disappointed. I didn't see anything from you on his medical photos. Did you see him? Did you see the photos of his medical?
He looks like he's dying. He actually looks like Alexander Dinenko. You know, the Ukrainian spy who was radiation poisoned. That's who he looked like. He looks real sick.
Anyone was going to fail a medical, you would have thought it'd be him.
I know. Yeah. He actually looked like he was in hospital. Not that he was doing a medical.
No, he looked like he was in hospital.
He looked like he'd been in a traffic accident. He's going, I'm okay.
Don't worry about me, man.
No, those shots of Neymar, remember when he was in hospital? During the World Cup. Yeah, I'm still alive, lads.
What do you think of Alberto? Do you think like he'll come back and play?
No.
Because I think he's got a lot of ability. There's a lot of people, like a lot of people have kind of dismissed him as this kind of player the committee signed. But like there is a lot of people as well who think it was Rodgers who really pushed them to get him, and that's why we went so high for him.
He seemed to have faith in him early on, and then something seemed to happen. It just went
bad. There seemed to be an attitude thing or a personality thing.
Yeah, actually, he was caught like pissed driving as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, so you just wonder, you know. Like, but again, I'm not going to worry about the lads that are out on loan. Who, you know, in real terms, when there's still a lot more outs that needs to happen from the squad as well. But the outs are going to be reliant on us getting in decent replacements. And, you know, it's this constant balancing act, which we don't seem to be able to get right, you know. And that's the key thing. We still, like, in my opinion, we still need to ship Johnson. We still need to ship Lucas this year. We still need to, you know, and then...
We're still heavy on big earners. People say we've done well and everything. But if you look at our squad now, especially the squad that he's taken over to America... You know, you're looking at Coates is in there, Reina's in there, Brad Jones, if we're still looking to sort of replace him with another keeper. You're looking at Lucas, Daniel Agger. They're all rumoured to go. They're all on decent wages. Glenn Johnson. You know, there's still a fair load of players still available to him, even though we've sort of strengthened our squad. Now they've all come back off loan. It's quite a bloated squad now.
Yeah. Jim, talk to me about two of those guys in particular, Barini and Agger, who reportedly have returned home from the tour to get their injuries treated, despite the fact that all our medical staff are out on the tour. What?
Well, if they're all out on the tour, who did Leverin's medical yesterday?
Well, that's a very good point. But there was no picture of Zaf.
Well, no. That must have, maybe he flew to Bolton. No, he couldn't have flown to Boston and got back. He'd still be working in the airport. Well,
if he was on Remy Airways, there's no chance of that.
Maybe they did the medical on the plane.
Well, to wrap it up on a slightly upbeat note, how do you feel? Are you optimistic that there's going to be some big, mad, wonderful signing coming in? Because I'd love to see someone a bit nuts coming into the club.
No, I don't think we will sign.
You don't?
No, but that doesn't mean I'm being negative about it, because I'm trying to stay as positive as possible. I don't think we're the sort of club anymore that signs big marquee, big name players. I think we're the sort of club that don't mind spending money on players who fit the right profile and players who we think we can improve and turn into world beaters.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're going to do. And I'm happy with that to a certain extent. You know, there's no guarantee you sign someone, you know, for 50 million quid on 200 grand a week. There's no guarantee they're going to, you know, hit the ground running. There's no guarantee they're going to fit in. There's no guarantee that it won't affect the harmony in the squad. So, you know, the squad and the team is what I'm sort of looking to be improved. And I hope that, you know, come the 1st of September, we're all singing off the same hymn sheet and we're looking at a stronger squad and a more balanced first 11. And I think, you know, we can go and have a good season again.
Yeah. Paul, what about you? Are you happy or optimistic that we might actually possibly get someone crazy in or a big name signing that everyone seems to be calling out for?
I don't know. I'm with Jim. I don't think we're going to. I think we seem to have, you know, we've gone into the Champions League and we seem to have kind of used that status to spend kind of extra on players I think we could have gotten anyway last season, rather than kind of trying to drive at some, you know, the higher bracket of players. So that's what we've done so far, really. So I don't think we're going to get in the
squad bolstering for you.
Yeah, that's what I think it's going to
be. Phil, how's your hope levels?
Sure, it's fucking early in the window still, so we've got 4 weeks to go. So I'm going to fall on the side of positivity because Dave Thomas will actually knife us if we don't start finding some positivity again. So I think we might revisit the Shaqiri deal because of everything that's gone on, and I think we'll sign a striker. And then, do you know what? If we sign Manquillo and we manage to revive the Moreno deal,
yeah,
suddenly spirits will be lifted again because we'll have addressed the fullback areas, right? And then you can focus all your attention on the forward options.
The one forward position or two, yeah.
And like, you know, you could even live with one forward if we went out and fucking made a mega splash. And I know the lads say it's unlikely we'll do a marquee signing. I'm saying fine, but like if we went out and spent 30 million on Julian Draxler, I'd say, like, everyone knows that this is the upcoming kid in Germany. So, you know, that would suddenly everyone's juices would be flowing. You know, he scores goals, he makes goals, he's direct, he's aggressive, do you know what I mean? Or if you bring in Lacazette and you revive the Shaqiri deal again, you're saying to yourself, yeah, now we've got such
but that Draxler deal, Phil, that's the sort of deal that we would do. I would believe that we'd do that. I wouldn't class him necessarily as a marquee signing, but I would think that that's the sort of deal we'd be looking to do.
Yeah, it's still under that umbrella of potential there and could grow with us as a footballer.
And we seem to spend time, our scouts seem to be at Schalke matches as well last year. So like there's a hope in me that we could still, you know, nail someone like that and bring them in. And I think the money is there to do it as well.
So what you're telling me is my hopes of Balotelli coming in and shaking everyone up are gone.
Christ, can you imagine Balotelli?
I would love it. Just love it.
He is brilliant. Asshole.
Him and
he's an asshole.
You wouldn't like to see him.
He's a lazy.
If we sign Balotelli, I hope he lives with Enrique. The selfies will be
the best ever.
Could you imagine the madness?
Fireworks off in his living room
as Enrique plays FIFA topless. Yeah.
So that's what we're going for then. Manquillo and Moreno in, and then a failed bid for Balotelli in the last minute of the transfer window.
There you go. You heard it here first. Right, Jim. Thanks a million for your time, man. Really appreciate that.
Pleasure's all mine, guys.
Thanks.
Cheers, Jim. See you later.
Take care. Take care. We finish with some admin as usual, and we start with a mention for Astro Park. 5-7 aside football, this is your place to go. So if you want to get and book a game, get onto www.astropark.ie. You should get on our website for lots of deadly stuff to do and see and some amazing articles to read. No excuses. Just get on there, www.lfcdaytrippers.com. And finally, our competition winner who gets a Stephen Gerrard signed jersey is David Swords. And that jersey is courtesy of soccerspeaker.co.uk and Five Times. And finally, your day trippers tonight were Paul Brennan, Phil Casey, and myself, Trev Downey.
I'm the man with a plan.
right, man with a plan. I'm going to come to you first on this question. It's just basically we're a bit shit at transfers, and I'm going to throw that one at you, mate. So you can get the ball rolling on this, okay?
Why are we shit at transfers? That is a good question.
That is. Okay, well, hang on. Let me introduce you, mate.
It started how I wanted it to go on.